when they take a minute to get to know each other. If you are listening to this via recording, then obviously the recording is work. And we'll be talking about advanced handwriting analysis tonight and trait stacking. I want to welcome you. I'm calling in from California, and there will be some background noise today. I have do my best to keep it at a minimum, as if you hear a saw or something, realize they're putting in wooden floors in the room next to me. So I apologize in advance for some of the background noise you might hear. So let me tell you a couple things. If on your invitation, you had a PDF file. We sent out one on Wednesday. I think I finished it late Wednesday. So if you don't have any notes or anything, go back to the web page that you downloaded the phone number at, and there's a brand new file with the same name on it. And that's got a graphic on the top. The left-hand graphic says Handwriting University's annual International Handwriting Analysis Conference, and then in the middle it says trait stacking and evaluated traits. So we're going to go through some of that. And actually, it's sort of a quiz. So tonight what we're going to do is go through the PDF. We're going to talk about some different traits, the principles of stacking and evaluated traits, and also any of your questions. So let's just go. Does anybody have any, right off the bat, any big questions, overview questions, or just a story that you want to share with me?
I do.
Yes, who's speaking?
This is Georgia from North Carolina. My son's online as well.
Yes, fantastic. Let's talk.
Can somebody fake their, like if they know they're getting tested, having a handwriting analysis done, can they fake that, like write their best? Would traits still show up?
That's a great question. They could fake it. The problem is, would a good analyst know if they were faking it or not? That's really the question. If someone were to read my books, especially my self-improvement books, the graphical therapy books, and they said, you know, I want to write so that someone thinks I've got a great self-image, I've got tons of ambition, and I'm really dynamic, they could definitely write some of those traits into their writing, and an inexperienced graphologist would probably miss it. The problem is, if you fake it too much, it begins to look contrived, and it doesn't look natural at all. Kind of like a forgery note. If you're doing a suicide note or a forgery or a kidnapping note and you're trying to master your handwriting, sometimes it's slow, it's contrived, it's traced. There's some clues to things that aren't real. We're actually working on a case today, I just finished it up, where there's a suicide note involved, and the person that, the mother of the guy that the kid that killed himself, doesn't believe it is a suicide.
Yeah,
believes it was a murder.
Good to see you.
Well, there's someone that forgot she's on a conference call, so it's okay. No problem. So the case is, the question is, you know, did the person fake it? Is it forgery? Is it real? So you've got to look really subtly to find out the details of whether they're faking or not. Your question is really good, because saying, hey, will we fake now? Well, maybe. The thing is, most people on the planet have never read a book on what we're doing, so most of them aren't going to fake you out. And, you know, why would you? Hopefully, if you fake it long enough, maybe you'll actually change yourself and you would have a good self-esteem.
I think I confused that question then. If you write your best, knowing your handwriting is going to be analyzed, not realizing that there are certain traits that may follow anyway,
mm-hmm.
and it's a good graphologist, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Can she still tell that she's still looking for specific traits regardless if you write your best?
Well, when you say write your best, you mean the prettiest as you think it could be, opposed to your sloppy writing?
Exactly.
Well, see, that's actually, you never know how that's going to backfire, because in some cases, your best handwriting is your prettiest. Sometimes that's the straightest baseline, and this is where we start getting into advanced traits, so we'll jump right in, is that the straighter the baseline, the more perfect the penmanship, that trait most people consider pretty handwriting. Would you agree with me?
Yes.
Or better handwriting. Well, that trait, in my world, is anal retentive, obsessive compulsive, and uptight.
But you look at the whole picture, don't you? You look at the whole writing. You don't just look at certain things, right?
Well,
like how
yes
neat
and no.
It is, or how pretty, or something like that.
Well, and that's the magic of it as you get past the basic level,
yes.
Is you have to look at the whole picture, and you can still look at traits, and you
sure.
can be really good at it. But
uh-huh.
you're not going to have the depth. You're not going to be able to get $300 an hour to consult with employees if you only have memorized the 50 cards in the grapho deck.
Sure.
And you say that, you have somebody, oh, of course you did. But I've got seriously people all over the world that are like, hey, I got the grapho deck, that's all I need.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need, you know, any more. This is, and then they go, yeah, but it's kind of limited. You know, you don't have these city traits. I'm like, are you crazy? That was like a It was like an elementary game. It's like an arithmetic, Jack.
Okay, so tonight what you're going to really kind of focus on is the whole picture and not just certain strokes, certain pressures, certain angles. You're going to kind of take the whole picture. Is that right?
Well, not particularly. The whole picture sounds to me like you're asking for some gestalt. And let me tell you what gestalt means.
Okay.
Gestalt was a German therapist that specialized in images, ink splots, a very holistic view.
Right.
So he would stand 30 feet back from a painting and say, well, what does the whole picture say to you?
Okay.
Whereas more of the French version of the graphologist would walk up really close and go, well, here's an individual stroke. What would that mean?
Right.
And so a gestalt person is looking at margins, spacing, movement. We're definitely not doing that on this phone call, but we will be doing it in detail at the seminar next month.
Oh, you are?
Which is actually 4 weeks away.
In June. That's what I think I want to do, is because I think I have had a compatible to your level 1 and 2. Now I want to get in more into the criminal part, more into the health. I can see broken bones. I can see past surgeries. I can see some criminal tendencies like child molestation. I can see some of those types of tendencies. What I don't see necessarily is like a holistic part of it where I want to put it all together and not just pick on one certain stroke, one certain depth, one certain angle, one certain way that they do things. I want to look at, you know, the whole picture, get the whole person in.
Well, that's why we had it. One of the things that we got feedback, because people have come to our seminars for maybe 3-4 years in a row, they go, Bart, you're kind of telling us the same thing, and we love the new stories, and we love the new stuff, we love the docuzam, but, you know, we've already mastered, you know, the basic 60-70 traits, you know,
right.
What else is out there? And here's the interesting thing about that, is it's for you and me, because I've been doing it a while, and so have you. You get a handwriting sample and you're a little bit confused because you see all the things, but you know they're going to be put together in a way that you haven't thought about before.
Right.
Phyllis Maddenly used to just amaze me. She would just come up with these metaphors. I'm like, oh my God, where'd you get that? And and as she quizzed me, I realized I really did see all the traits that she was seeing. The difference is she tied them together and she made a clever meaning of it that I really hadn't thought about at that point.
Yeah.
So the other part of that story I'm going to tell you is that you don't really need all the advanced stuff to really be great at handwriting.
Uh-huh.
And that's the thing. Most people never get to the level of they memorize all 60, 70, 80 basic traits. They're finding handwriting samples they just don't see what to do with. Most people don't get to that level. And I surveyed the people coming to the conference, and about a third of them are brand new, meaning that they've had very no handwriting. However, we have sent most of them the basic 101 course. A lot of them got in on the pre-purchase, so they got the 2005 DVD.
Uh-huh.
So they should have at least working knowledge of the 50 basic traits.
Right.
And surprisingly, what's going to happen, in fact, even today, what we'll talk about when we get to the PDF file, is that what's listed as basic traits, a lot of people that have had our course don't have all those traits as basic.
Oh.
And here's why. Because I have synthesized, especially for this seminar, the best of IGAS, which is out of Chicago, the best of some of the the other books out there. I won't list all their names. Erica Kuros, these people that write books, that have written books, including the health people, and synthesize what's really useful and what's not. And unfortunately, there's a lot of unuseful stuff in books, and it's hard to sift through what's accurate and what's not. There is a lot of books out there. It's very confusing when you get into the higher levels.
Yeah.
And what Kurt and I did, my father, is we really sifted through the stuff that I thought was a bunch of BS.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was personally biased, including religious.
Right.
I won't make my religious views known.
Yeah.
I will make fun of them sometimes because I like to make a lot of jokes. And so I definitely will make levity. But what I have found was that about 20% of most of the books speculate, and there's no evidence for it. And so I've sifted through the stuff, and all the speakers have come. I've asked them to be really conscious of saying, hey, if you say there's a health problem in their knee, show me where that is.
Uh-huh.
If you say something is ambivalent or something is this, show me the stroke. And so to answer your question, we will get to the big holistic picture. However, the most important thing is taking the strokes and stacking them together, which is called straight stacking,
okay,
evaluating what that might mean if one is primary and one is secondary, And then also the big picture of let's take in the zones and margins. That's also an important
right.
part.
Yeah.
I have a lot of pure graphologists don't like my style because we start on the basics with the traits.
Uh-huh.
And what I find is that if you want someone to really learn this, give them something that's accurate from the beginning.
Right.
And those 50 cards are accurate. They're not the whole picture. They're very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And if they learn that, they tend to move on. If you give someone pure gestalt stuff from the beginning,
yep.
they sound like an astrologist.
Right.
Not to offend any astrologists, but it's not what I teach.
Good.
It's not ambiguous. It's not hypothetical. And I'm not predicting the future.
Good.
And so that's why we do it that way. And I think that if you look at any of my students that have graduated and gone on to learn gestalt, they're much more grounded in logic and psychology versus the people who also have to do tarot card reading to make a living.
Yeah. So yeah, then you'll probably count me in your seminar because I'm really interested in that field.
Well, thank you. I love that. And on the link I sent you just now, there is a special. We give you the tapes and
great.
You can bring a friend. Okay. So let's get back to the seminar. I know some people say, okay, let's visit in a personal lesson. Well, it wasn't a personal lesson. Everything there really applies to what we're talking about,
correct.
Advanced traits. Now, here's the question. Everyone on the phone here, do you know the basic 50 traits? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, most people do. So two people on the phone do. If you don't know them, say, I don't know them.
No, I don't know.
Okay, good. So let me tell you how this is going to work. And this is for your knowledge here tonight, as well as your knowledge if you get any of our home study courses, or the knowledge if you come to Dallas. Here's the deal. There is about 70 basic traits that we cover in the level 1 and level 2 of the home study course. Now, those 70 traits, there's probably a lot more mentioned on the tapes, but if you open up the dictionary in the back of Dr. Walker's book, which is basically the textbook with the certification stuff, there are 70 traits. Very similar to the Grapho deck, but the Grapho deck only has 50. Those traits are basic traits. There are probably another 20 or more, which we will introduce at the seminar on Friday. Those are also considered basic, and here's why they're basic. Because as I flip through the books from the 50s and 60s and flip through the other books on trait stacking evaluation, they reference traits that we don't reference. Now, here's why I didn't use them in the level 1, 2, and 3, 4 course. Because they don't occur very often. And this is important to realize. Because people go, oh, Bart, you know, because I've had criticism because we don't teach some of the, you know, real advanced stuff in the certification program. Well, let me tell you, I've been doing this 20 years. And the number of times, you know, I have seen certain traits like intolerance, which is a trait from the person's book, is probably 4 times in 20 years. So, yes, it's a stroke. Yes, it probably means intolerance. But do I see it often? Should we dedicate a whole hour to it?
Right.
It wasn't, in my opinion, I'd rather teach graphotherapy. I'd rather teach rapport skills. I'd rather teach some making money skills in a 3-day workshop or tapes than to hit a trait you never see. Now, if you're specifically studying criminal behavior, murderers, rapists, those traits you'll probably see a higher relevance.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, Don Lehu gave a great lecture on traits of pedophiles. I recorded that lecture. It's a diplomatic sale, and he's again because it's on the 2000 seminar tape, and that was amazing because he synthesized it was like 17 different strokes that people actually might have as a pedophile. By the way, nobody had all 17 of them. So it wasn't, you know, a fact of, okay, this one stroke means pedophile. It was if they've got 7 or 8 of them, hey, they're a really bad person and they're creepy.
Yeah.
And that's what you get when you get stacking traits. Okay, go ahead and get your PDF on. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. Let's take a look at the first page. Trait stacking and evaluated traits. Okay? Lecture notes from Professor Kagan. Now, on the right side, let me explain how this is work. On the right side is basic traits, and this is a partial list. This is by no means a full list. But I did include everything that would be considered part of these 4 words, which we'll use as examples today, as what would be combinations of these traits. So let's take a minute and do the game. I'm going to unmute you in just a second. But what would happen if you were asked to show persistence? Now, persistence in the Grapho deck and the basic traits is what? If it's simply a bow tie in the letter T. So if you had a letter T, like my name is Bart, B-A-R-T, and it bow tied, sort of like didn't pick the pen up, went over right, over to left, then that would be persistence. There's a great example of it, well, at least similar to it, on the second page, on page 2. That very last stroke in his signature, that one kind of bow ties. Well, that's not exactly persistence, but if that was a letter T, That would be classic persistence, but that kind of bow tie thing. So that's persistence. Now, if we're trait stacking, we assume that that obvious persistent stroke is not there, and so we're going to combine two or three strokes to get that. And the reason this is important is I have seen many times when somebody says, hey, you know, am I really sensitive to criticism? And I'll glance at it, and if I'm being lazy, I'll glance at the letter D, and I'll say, oh, well, you don't have a huge D loop. Maybe you're not that sensitive to criticism. They go, oh, my God, I'm really sensitive. And I'm like, oh, my God, I feel wrong. And, gee, don't we hate to be wrong? And that's the thing is, it's not that it's wrong. You have to understand certain principles of it. If something is not in the writing, you can't assume that it's not there. And that's an important part, and you'll kind of learn this as we go through it. So if something's not in the writing, it still might be part of their character. It just doesn't show up in the individual stroke. And that's a really important part, because just because it's not individual stroke doesn't mean it doesn't exist. What you don't know, and this is kind of hard to know until you get advanced levels, until you've done this for years, is what other strokes make up that thing. And one of the things that we're going to learn today is, if somebody is sensitive to criticism but doesn't have a loop in their D, how would you know they're sensitive? How would you know? And so those are things that that's really important. And the other thing is, in fact, I think we had a video newsletter last week on words of how you use a metaphor. And that's so critical when you're doing oral analysis, okay? So I'm going to take you off mute here for just a second. We'll talk about it and see what you think of the first one. Okay, is everybody back with me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Excellent. They changed the phone system. Usually it tells me when we're on hold or not, and now I don't hear that confirmation. So I was feeling a little slow there. So let's talk about it. Let's take persistence. Now, forget about the actual bow tie. What other traits are similar to persistence as far as meaning or behavior that you've probably learned? Anyone? Go ahead and just yell it out.
Determination.
Great. Determination. I heard that. What else?
Concentration.
That's also a good thing, because if someone's more concentrated, they may finish what they start. Okay? What else? That's it?
Drive, stubborn.
Now that's a longer conversation that I'm not going to have, because I have had more than one conversation with girlfriends about the difference between stubbornness and persistence. And I think it's different. But I think that stubbornness is a defense mechanism. Persistence is an acceleration or a success stroke. Someone said heavy pressure. Is that what you said? That's great, because people that write heavier tend to finish things and have longer enduring emotions. So that's very good, too. So that's very, very good. Good start there. Now, if you want to, you can look at the right here, and we could start circling or moving those words over to you think might equal persistence. Okay? So let's see now. I'm looking down analytical, maybe. Concentration, maybe. I think that's probably a good bet. Condescension, no. Deliberateness, no. Attention to details, not so much. Ego, large capitals. You know what? It's not listed, but I would almost guess that someone with a bigger ego would probably finish things based on ego of those that don't.
Well,
not
I think
bad.
They're open-minded.
Open-minded. That might be one. I don't know if that relates to persistence, but it's a good trait.
Yeah.
One of the things you'll notice, and this is what happened. I'm going to go over this lecture again at the conference. I used to sell a book by Erica Caros, and I did a little audio tape with it, which no longer sell anymore, and the book is not in print anymore. I was going to sell it. And I basically took all the negative traits that were, quote, you know, stack traits, and I looked for patterns, because it was very confusing. In fact, I picked up an IGS book from 1970. Is someone asking me a question? I picked up an IGS book, which is this school that went bankrupt a couple years ago, but Milton Bunker was the original founder. And I looked at some of these books, and it was just one grid after another. It was basically one graph. You know, it was really confusing. I mean, I'm not explaining it, but it just completely confused me as far as, like, it wasn't intuitive. It didn't seem logical. It was just a list of traits put together. And I thought, well, what's the pattern here? Why is this trait bad? Or why is these traits mean that somebody's unethical? And what my conclusion was is there's a pattern there with negative traits and positive traits. And that's kind of what you're going here. You're saying, hey, you know, talking with open-mindedness, that's a positive trait. And so what happens is we can identify the traits that are sort of like white or positive, identify the traits that are sort of negative or or pessimistic or dark, what I just meant dark, you end up getting a pattern here. And so we sort of have this here because one of the traits on the four is skepticism, mm-hmm. which is sort of a little negative. It's not negative like violence or anything. But you find things like narrow-mindedness being part of that category. Okay? Let's look at persistence. What else would be part of persistence? How about the lower zone? Would it be big or short? What do you think?
Short.
It would be short to be persistent or long to be persistent?
Long. It's so long.
I think if it was long, it'd be like fantasy land.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The other trait that is called determination is solely based on a very long, heavy downstroke.
Yeah.
And so people with more energy, and you'll especially learn this in the health section, is that the more energy they have, the more they finish things.
Right.
So if you're out of energy, if you're sick, if you're depressed, your Y loops, your downstrokes will actually, kind of shrivel up. So persistence would also see determination as one of the characteristics. So even if you don't have the bow tie, you will see the following traits. And here's what kind of accumulated the books. It's not all of them, but if you want to write these down. You would have heavy pressure. You would have determination or longer downstrokes. You have tenacity. No one said that. Tenacity, which is a very final stroke that's hooked. And that's kind of like stubbornness. I have to agree with you. It's sort of like they're hanging on to ideas. But it also can look like persistence because they hang on. And then, interesting enough, vertical slant, like an AB slant, will increase the likelihood that somebody has persistence versus a DE or E plus slant. So here it is again. There's also a couple of things which are not so traits as much as strokes. Frequent angles. It seems like when people have more angular writing, they've got more analytical ability, or at least lean that way, and they tend to be more persistent. I think it's a way to calculate and analyze. Obviously, any persistent tie strokes, which is what we talked about earlier, is called persistence. And then also the regularity of letter forms. And this is exactly what the young lady was asking before. Are we going to put it all together sort of in a gestalt way? People have more regularity. They're more predictable. They're more emotionally stable. And they tend to finish what they start. So those are some of the things that combine together to equal persistence. Now, is there a sure formula? Well, here's the thing. With almost every advanced stroke, there's not a formula that says 2 plus 2 equals 1. I mean, we've got lists of what traits and combination of different areas, but the truth is you're going to see patterns. And the better you get, you'll see patterns. And the trick that I learned to really become advanced is I would always ask, okay, I see a trait or I don't see a trait. And you might want to write this down. So let's say that you're looking at a piece of hand and you're saying, well, is this person sensitive? So you look at the D and you go, wow, there's no loop in the D. What else in the handwriting would make this person react as if they're sensitive? So that's the question you ask yourself, and this is part of the NLP that I teach as far as understanding how linguistically you talk to yourself. What else in the handwriting would reveal this person is blank? And that's the best question, because that process will teach you to become a great expert of human behavior and psychology. So the process of asking that question, even if you never memorize all the stacks of manuals that we're going to give you in the Dallas seminar, if you never memorize all the different combinations, the different 30 traits, if you never memorize all that stuff, you just ask, what else in the handwriting would make this person blank? You would get that question. So we'll try it here with skepticism. I'm going to put you off mute and ask questions. Okay, we're off mute. We're about halfway through. Any questions about what we talked about so far?
Yes, I wanted to ask you something about the ticks. Ticks on the ends of strokes. I've heard it can also mean anger that resolves itself quickly, acquiring material things, and then what you were saying about being tenacious.
Tenacity, yeah. Tenacity is usually in the T's, so it's in sort of the upper zone. The ticks on the end also depends on what kind of tick. It's if it's a big loopy, like a hand, it becomes desire to acquire. If it's a small angular kind of
little,
an arrow,
yeah,
then it's anger, and it's called an anger tick.
Oh,
so, again,
okay.
It depends on the shape of it. And, again,
okay,
that's sort of a clue into what else is around the handwriting. So, if someone has constant eye dots on the right side, I don't know they've got temper, but it's a pretty good clue to go check out a T-bar and see if the T's on the right side.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's on the right side, then I look at the eye dot, and if it's slash, well, now I know the person's annoyed and temperamental. Mm-hmm. What else would I look for to find out if somebody has a temper or that is prone to blow up?
Retraced strokes?
No.
I think long crossings.
Long crossing would be enthusiasm. That's absolutely correct because you're increasing the energy. The retrace is close, but I would almost go for aggressiveness.
Yes.
You got that V at the bottom. That's called aggressiveness. Again, very basic trait. It's in the grapho deck and on up. So you look for these traits that are hostile. Now, what slant would a person have with a pretty bad temper?
All the way to the right, I think.
Yeah, now, again, that's always true, but I agree. If you're going to stack the traits, the person that has more of a slant to the right will be more expressive.
Yeah.
And ink-filled ovals would be it.
So with short, because then you got muddy handwriting, which means they're not quite as communicative.
Yeah.
So you guys are good. You're beginning to stack all these traits that are considered a little bit negative.
Heavy pressure.
Heavy pressure would, again, make them more, at least they'll hold on to the anger more. That's not always true. One thing about this that's really hard is you always find an exception. And that's when you want to scratch your head and slap your mama and think, oh, my God, this is so complicated. I once dated a girl who did have a CD slant, who was a perfectionist. She did have a temper stroke, and for about 90% of the time, she was pretty well balanced. But because of her perfectionism and because of her need for structure, her temper was worse than most people I've seen because she didn't have an effective way to channel the energy, and so she got upset quickly. And so I didn't really see it in the writing because even though it was a small temper T-bar, I was like, well, I thought she had to be an E-plus writer to be temperamental. Well, a perfectionist will actually blow up faster than someone with bouncy baseline because they're not as flexible.
What about the high buckle and the K?
Definitely, I think that would definitely add to any temper. Absolutely.
Okay, what about slanting, not necessarily just to the right, but slanting upwards like a domineering person?
Well, domineering would slant the T-bar downward.
Okay, would downward? Okay.
Yeah, the baseline would go, the baseline is irrelevant in domineering.
Okay.
However, the T-bar would slant down for domineering and have a point on the T-bar such as sarcasm.
Uh-huh.
The baseline relates to somebody's mental status.
Right.
So depressed, not depressed, optimistic, et cetera.
Okay.
Good. If you can learn the basics and step back and see patterns, it becomes very intuitive. Although it's not intuitive, there's nothing about this that's psychic. Mm. It becomes logical, and that's the word I'm looking for: logical. So we can all think. And one of the things that I want to do, especially on this call, but especially in Texas, is I want to teach people the process for stacking traits rather than having you memorize a bunch of lists. Because on my teacher sheet here, I have a list of the different combinations that can make up these traits. I will share them with you, absolutely. And in Dallas, I'll share the list too. But memorizing that list is not near as effective as going through the process that you guys just did on temper. And then you become totally independent and you start thinking, what else could make this? Yeah, E-plus writer, right, muddy, ovals in the middle, very good job, you know. Mm. And then some of the random traits like the ticks, which aren't really very common, but you know they're not real positive, right?
Right.
I mean, they're just not, you know, you don't see that in Mother Teresa's writing at all. Okay. Good question.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
We're looking at some grapho cards right now, and on the tempers card it doesn't say it, but I'm looking at the handwriting, and on each T, on the right side, there's that's where the T bar mostly is. Does that have anything to do with temper?
Yeah, if that's called an individual basic stroke. So if somebody has most of this T-bar on the right side, it would indicate the person has trouble maintaining emotional control when they have emotion.
What about
now,
the left
unless
side?
On the left side is procrastination, meaning they put things off.
Right.
Is this your handwriting or is it one of your friends?
You've got to be one of her friends.
Well, he's shut up for some reason.
He's looking at the grapho deck.
Yeah. So my question is, are you looking at your own handwriting or just the grapho deck? You're just asking a question in general.
The grapho deck, but I know, my T's, they're sort of like, they go to the T-bars a little, more on the left.
Good. Well, the left is a little bit lazy, but hey, you know what? Sometimes we all do that. So that's procrastination. Now, the thing is, some people look and say they see a temper and they go, well, but I've never seen this person blow up. Well, if they have self-control, if they have clannishness. I mean, there's a lot of things that would make someone have a temper but not show it very often. Does that make sense? So that's the beauty of having a stack these together. The cards will definitely give you a clue to what's there because you know they've got that potential. The only exception to the temper is that if somebody learned to write in India, they tend to write with the people on the right. However, I haven't noticed a profound temper in that culture, although people that run our campus in India have told me that the T-bar and the temper is always accurate. So even though traditionally I see more temper strokes in Indian writing and a different style, they still say that's very accurate, although I definitely think it's probably a little bit off-center because of their training. So great question. Everybody ready to move to skepticism? You have one more. Go ahead.
Hello?
I heard a young lady's voice. So say your name and I'll call.
Yes, I had a question about the, you were saying that the bow tie and the T in the T-bar indicates persistence?
Yes, ma'am.
What does it indicate? What about if the bow tie stem?
Is in the bottom of the Y or the top of the H?
The bottom of the T.
Hmm. It sounds like the same trait because you're basically not picking a pen and
right.
You're beginning to look at that. So it's definitely persistent.
So it doesn't matter where it's located in the T stroke, just the bow tie in there would indicate persistence.
Well, no, it doesn't matter. It definitely matters. It just both means persistence. And here's the distinction. If you remember the basic stuff that you learned, like in the 101 course in level 1, the different
mm-hmm.
zones have a certain meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a trait is in a certain zone, those traits apply to that trait more than the other one. So if someone's persistent in the middle zone, does that mean they finish things that are going on today or they finish philosophical ideas?
Today.
Right. So it has to do with like being persistent on homework, of a project that's in front of you. If someone has a really high T-bar or high persistence, they're going to finish long-term projects, maybe even philosophical projects, but especially long-term beliefs.
Okay.
So it does make a difference. In fact, almost everything can be sort of analyzed into the different zones.
Okay.
And that's one of the things is if you start off with all the zones, you confuse people. But the truth is all these traits are sort of where they are and the meaning is in the lower zone usually connects with what area and what direction and what shape it is. It's much more logical than one would think when just flipping through the cards. You think
can
it's
I
a bunch
a
of
question?
Random traits. Yes, go ahead.
What about that T stroke that looks like a cowboy's lariat?
What? Cowboy's what?
Yeah, a lariat, which is a new word for me. I think she means lasso.
Uh-huh.
For the rest of us that don't speak Texan.
Like
or
a loop.
French or whatever that is. Yeah, you know, that's an exception. You don't say it very often either. And one thing I'm going to ask so that we can get through this call is, some of the questions that aren't related to what's on the paper here, I don't want to ask, and I'll tell you why. Because when I was in India, it seemed like everyone had 10 questions about their own handwriting that were not, like, on what was talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself getting very off track, and I didn't
right.
finish some of the stuff. So let me answer that, and then I'll ask you to keep it to what's on the page here. Otherwise, we just won't get finished.
I couldn't download that, so I'm not looking at it. Sorry.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, no, no problem. That general trait is persistence. It's the same sort of bow tie. And because it goes really high, it has to do with them really acquiring knowledge and education and ideas.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Because it scoots up into the upper zone. And that's one of the things that I want you to learn is that the strokes, even if it's not in a, quote, book, because a lot of the advanced books and a lot of advanced strokes, we simply don't see them hundreds and hundreds of times. So they're a little speculative to what metaphor or how to explain it. But if it's in the upper zone, it has to do with thoughts and ideas.
Hmm.
I haven't heard someone explain to me once that those upper loops, like the lasso, was voyeurism. People like to watch other people having sex. Now, I said, well, how in the heck did you get that? Like that, you know, that didn't make any sense. But the thing is, there wasn't a lot of evidence to dispute it or to concur with it. So to this day, that analyst thinks that he knows when someone's a voyeur because he was right once or twice.
Huh.
But it does, you know, it's like, okay, well, it is tough, so he is thinking. I didn't know. I couldn't extrapolate why that was what he said. But again, if we don't have too many examples of it and you don't get to interview them, you never know. One of the reasons I think that me and my father and ACT faculty are so talented at teaching this is we've been doing this for so long, and we ask. We're not afraid to be wrong. Do you like to watch? You know, what? You know, I'm not afraid to ask. Do you have an injury on your leg? You know, if you have an injury on your skull, I want to know if this is right, and that's the way we learn. And I encourage you all to do that, too, because there's definitely, you know, a whole slew of stuff that we know is factual, And there's a whole bunch of stuff that's what I consider research, and just turn and say, hey, we're just researching this. What do you think about it? Okay, let's look at skeptical for a minute. Skeptical, to me, is a negative trait. Now, if you're with Skeptics Magazine, or you pride yourself on being a professor or a academic, perhaps being skeptical is a charming asset. I think open-mindedness is a charming asset. I think skepticism is sometimes skeptical for the sake of just arguing. So what other traits do you think might be part of skeptical? So what you do is you say, well, there's no single trait for skeptical. What else would be there? So I'm going to look down my list, and I'm going to think, okay, what would be skeptical? Confusion, maybe, cumulative. You know, cumulative thinking might be skeptical. If someone's very procedural, they might be more skeptical. Attention to detail. I would think attention to detail would be a great trait to add to skeptical because they're going to notice every little thing. Depth of feeling? I don't know. Maybe not. Evasiveness? Maybe. Frank, blunt, friendliness? Definitely not friendly. Individualism, sincerity, intolerance, irritability. I think irritability. Maybe intolerance. Those of you who don't know what intolerance means, it's a trait that I learned years ago. It simply means a small square. It's almost impossible to describe. I actually have never seen it in person, but it's in somebody else's book. So it's sort of like a flat entry space where it should be rounded. Okay. Now, is the insincerity a pessimism? What would be pessimism? Well, the downward slant of the entire handwriting would be depression, also known as pessimism. Precision, that would be a very straight baseline, precise, maybe even concentration, which is more small writing, okay? And then the other thing which is most important is analytical. So if somebody has very sharp V's at the base of their handwriting on their M's and N's, they're going to be more analytical, they're going to think faster, they're going to be critical-mindedness, and they're going to be more skeptical. Now, that can be a very positive trait. In fact, all these traits except for narrow-mindedness can be very positive. Pessimism, not so much. Depression, not so much. But all can be very positive. Skeptical is not the worst trait in the world, but it can be annoying, especially if you throw in argumentative, if you throw in sarcasm. It makes sense. What do you throw in domineering? Now you've got someone who's skeptical and also annoying with their skepticisms. So this is some of the traits that you would definitely stack together to get skeptical. And this is useful. If you're at a party or you're doing analysis of a corporation and you find there's a skeptical person in the audience or someone who has, like, intolerance or attention to detail or narrow-mindedness or perfectionist, you can probably analyze their handwriting last because you may not want to deal with the skeptic right off the bat. In the video that was on 2 weeks ago in your newsletter, if you didn't get the chance to see it, it's by David Babb. Bob Beyer. Bob Beyer talks about how to do handwriting at an event. And he goes into detail saying, look, here's the thing. If you can get the E-plus writer with the talkative O's to be the first person at a party, you will have a phenomenal event. However, if you get an F-A writer that's skeptical, you will not have a good event because the first or second person really sets the tone for the evening if you're doing this for entertainment by any means. And by the way, I got a call today from an entertainment booker out of Salt Lake City, and they had a budget to spend almost $2,000 to bring in a handwriting expert at a corporate party. And I was surprising. Usually it's not that much. Usually it's about only $100 an hour. And I was like, oh, well, for $2,000, I might consider it. So there is actually money in this business if you guys are wondering how to pay back your investments on that. Okay, I'm going to unmute for a second. I skimmed through that one. We'll ask him a couple of questions. And we have about 15 minutes, so I'm ready. Great. Okay, any questions on skepticism for the next page?
What about the two-letter combinations, like in the word and? Like you see a C with a real open, like a TP. Is that like skepticism, stubbornness, things like that?
Well, you would have stubbornness if you have a TP anywhere in the writing, so that's going to be part of it. I don't know that stubbornness is skepticism, but I think it's a pretty good sister trait.
I do too.
It's not on my list of, stacking traits,
okay,
but it sure makes sense. Because remember, skepticism's sort of like, oh, I don't believe you. So to me, that's a very good observation.
Okay.
I think I'm going to add this to my sheet, and that'll probably show up in Dallas because I didn't think about stubbornness, but it sure makes sense to me.
Okay.
Good job.
Thank you.
Art, where is the square that you were mentioning on the letter form?
It is a trait called intolerance. I don't think I've ever seen it in person, at least not unless I'm looking at criminal writing. If you had a desire to acquire like the beginning of a hymn. You know what desire to acquire means? What trait
mm-hmm.
that is?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big entry loop, right? In fact, another trait calls that magnanimous. If someone has a really big entry loop. But if that entry loop looked like it was on a flat table on the beginning, and then it goes up, that's sort of like a straight line, and then you have a curve.
Yeah.
That's a whole cluster of negative traits. There's a whole cluster of small traits also at the baseline and lower zone that sort of have angles where they shouldn't be. They're pretty much all negative. And so instead of memorizing all the different subcontexts, because I hardly ever see them unless you're studying criminal behavior or violence, you remember anything that's sort of like angular, not necessarily in lower zone or sharp and angular, probably going to be some sort of negative connotation or unresolved anger issues.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So good question. And again, that's not in your graphotics, not in your basic stuff. Two reasons. A, it's not very common. And B, we will cover it on Friday at the conference so that when you get all the basic traits, you can stack them together. And at least you can look up some of those basic traits which you you haven't learned yet.
Excuse me.
Okay, so let's do these two more real quick, and then we're going to go back two and three and kind of play this game here. Now, did everybody write something in the space after the word withdrawal? Everybody write something into the word space after the word skepticism and persistence. So I gave you some of the answers, like human thinking, narrow-minded, precision, analytical, pessimism. Those are the traits in skepticism. Withdrawal. Now, this is an interesting one. The obvious one for withdrawal, if someone said, hey, is this person emotionally withdrawn, it's what?
Evasiveness or fear of criticism?
Fear of criticism is not the right answer, because I know a lot of extroverts that love to be needed, and so even though they're afraid of it, they need it. So what would be the second thing, the obvious thing of withdrawal?
Repression.
Repression, F.A. slant. Let's go with F.A. slant. Because F.A. slant is the most obvious thing where someone is emotionally withdrawn. Now, there are exceptions. If someone has big, big, big middle zone and they have an F.A. slant, they're going to be extroverted despite the emotional withdrawn. They still have those issues in there. Again, stacking two things together. If you stack two conflicting traits together or strokes like really, really large writing plus F.A. slant, one of them is going to win or it's going to diffuse the other one. In this case, it's going to be extroverted with a lot of tendencies to be emotionally withdrawn. But in this case, we're not going to use F.A. slant because that's the obvious choice. The withdrawal obviously is an F.A. slant. Now, again, there are exceptions, like I said, big writing, small writing, et cetera. You can also see withdrawal in concentration. If somebody writes very, very small, people will assume they're introverted. They may not be, but they don't have that extroverted social aptitude, is the word I call it, social aptitude. I believe I coined that word in the handwriting community. Now, you've got self-consciousness, which is a fear of ridicule. That's obvious. Okay, the person has a fear of being wrong, looking stupid. They withdraw. One of my really close friends was telling me that she was listening to a recent newsletter, which I think hasn't come out yet, because she was doing some editing for me. She said, you know, Kurt, he said, you know, it's none of your business what they think of you, a Mark Twain quote. She said, that really changed my life. She goes, I've always been worried that people will approve of me. I've always been afraid to speak up, always been afraid to ask for what I want because they may not like me. Well, the result is some people think she's introverted. And I thought to myself, her? She's not introverted. She's really talkative. Well, only if she doesn't fear you. So self-consciousness would, of course, make someone withdraw. Also, what else would make someone withdraw? Low self-esteem. Obviously, if someone has a fear of ridicule, a fear of not being good enough, they'll sit on the sidelines instead of jumping up. Sensitive to criticism, which I believe was the first word out of somebody's mouth, so good job. You're right. Sensitive criticism, if it's combined with certain things, would make them withdraw. Now, if sensitive criticism is combined with ego, huge ego, enthusiasm, desire for attention, well, they wouldn't withdraw. Because someone with a desire for attention and a DE writer and a big bubbly writing, well, those three things would obviously mean that they're not going to withdraw, but they'll still be sensitive. And that's the thing about handwriting and about psychology in general. You can pick one trait, but another trait in the person's character can completely offset it and make it either irrelevant or really behind the curtain. Here's some more things. If you got your pen in hand, withdrawal, self-interest, clannishness. Clannishness. I'm going to go ahead and just give you the answer because we're running low on time. Self-interest would, of course, be like any sort of stroke that goes over to the back, like into the past, or like an ABFA slant. Clannishness is a term coined by Milton Bunker, which means a very tiny lower loops in the Y's, almost a small curved square loop in the Y or the G. his books back in the 50s actually insinuated this trait, insinuated homosexuality. It definitely does not insinuate homosexuality, but that's why we buy books published in 2006, not in 1954, because we do update these things. It was probably true in the 50s, because if you were gay in 1950, it probably wasn't very accepted. So what happened is people began to get clannish, they were close, they didn't talk to many people, they basically shut out the entire world except for two or three friends. So it wasn't a homosexual trait, it was people that were gay tend to be more clannish and a fear. So the trait was called clannishness, and that's very accurate. So very, very little trust. Other traits that would stack up to withdrawal would be vanity plus fear of criticism. Interesting. So if someone has a huge fear of what people think, really tall T-stems, they will tend to withdraw or be the quiet, shy type, you know. Well, that's fear. That's what that is. Okay. It is now 10 till, so let me the next one, then we'll get to any samples. Sensitive to criticism. This is the most important one. This is something you see all the time. And, you know, as a culture, as human beings, everybody seems to have some sort of sensitivity. There's some sort of button that triggers their emotions. And that doesn't mean it's all critical. That doesn't mean it's all jealous, all self-image, which, you know, every talk show will sell self-esteem. But people do have sensitive criticism, and it comes from a couple things. Most obvious one, low self-image. If people have a low self-esteem, even if they have no loops in their D's or T's, it is likely they might overreact to criticism. I can't believe anybody loves criticism, but some people handle it a whole lot better than others. So if you're stacking traits on top of low self-image, I would also stack in self-consciousness, which is a fear of being made foolish. Again, very similar to self-sensitive criticism. Also, resentment, which is a hard angular stroke. Remember I talked about those angles? Any kind of angles, that's what that means, is anger. Well, that's going to, you know, add fire to that self-conscious or that fear. Sharp M's and N's, that's interesting. The more pointy the M's and N's, the faster they may find out that you're criticizing. Don't know if I always agree with that, but it is in some of the other books, so I put it here on this list here. Impulsiveness, well, that makes sense. If someone's impulsive, they're going to get their feelings hurt a little bit faster than if they take things more logically. F.A. writers, withdrawal. Now, that's interesting. An F.A. writer is more sensitive than a D.E. writer, which I wouldn't have thought, but here it is. It's plus either one. Vanity, imagination, resentment, impulsiveness, any of these combinations. Now, it doesn't mean all the combinations, but if you add one, two, or three, you definitely get some issues. And I think the difference between the emotional withdrawal and impulsiveness is an A-B writer or an E-plus writer. You know, one of those two extremes will make people act sensitive to criticism. Okay, we are now off mute. I think I can check this. Let's take a look at page 2 and page 3 for the last few minutes.
All right,
yes, I heard a man's voice. Go ahead and ask you.
All right, it's Terry in New York City. As far as withdrawal, with spacing, in other words, if they physically withdrew from the edge of the coin, would that mean anything?
You mean the edge of the paper?
Yeah.
Yeah, there are some margins, and that's a very important trait, especially after you've learned the traits. If they are, leave a huge margin to the right, but no margin on the left, they are scared of the future. So emotionally, they're connected to the past. Mm-hmm. When people move, the best example I can show of this is if you guys have taken the handwriting wizard test, which is online, there's a really good page with 5 or 6 different diagrams that shows the different marginal options,
mm-hmm.
And we do show that in the wizard, and it's a pretty good thing. Also, in the very last chapter of your handouts of the classic course, there is also the margin. So both of those are in your home study course if you have it. But it basically, if there's a wide left margin, they're leaving the past behind and getting to the future, pretty healthy. If there's a wide right margin, they're clinging to the left. So wherever that ink goes, that's where they go, and it correlates perfectly with the three zones, which are sort of the fundamental principles and basics, and you learn that as well. Great, great question. Okay, here's the question, page 2. What, if any, of the traits on the evaluated traits is this person? Does this person love routine? Quick yes or no?
No,
not really. It's sloppy, it's messy, it's variety. What about skepticism?
Yes.
I think there's probably a clues. You're skeptical. You got a little temper. You've got some muddy writing.
Mm.
It doesn't match what we talked about skepticism perfectly, but I would probably say, okay, maybe. Let's go back and look at it in detail. You do have closed E's. That's the most important thing right there, as well as deliberation, which means they really decide on things. How about persistence?
No.
Well, you do have that one trait with the double loop back there. So I'm going to say, well, he sort of has that one. Boy, what else? Determination? No, not really.
Mm-mm.
Temper? A little bit. Sensitive? Don't know. I would probably be ambivalent on persistence.
Yeah.
Resentment?
Yes.
You know what? I don't see the classic resentment stroke, but I tell you what, I see a lot of fears.
Yeah.
I see temper. I see anger. I see muddy writing. So I would say, yeah, the person probably has some unresolved anger issues.
Mm-hmm.
Patience? Not in a million years.
No.
Argumentative?
Yes.
Maybe because you got temper, you got the closed-minded, you have the impulsive nature, and you got sort of the sarcasm. Say, temperamental.
I think so.
Yeah, I think probably, absolutely. You definitely don't have a lot of controls in this writing. You don't have like this logical, sweet, controlled, demure person. Okay, argumentative.
Yes.
We talked a little bit probably. Prone to poor ethics.
Mm.
Yeah, strenuous baseline.
Why?
Snaky baseline.
This is the thing, and it's way too complicated to answer yes or no here. Ethics are a combination of a lot of things. And ethics are mostly, and this is a hard thing to digest, ethics are mostly a lack of a lot of bad stuff. So if they don't have a lot of the dark streaks, we have to assume they have more ethics. Believe me, all of us would steal an apple in the middle of a war for our kids. But we still have good morals and ethics. So there's always situations where we may vary ethics. If you look at the next page, on page 3, you have somebody that obviously has a little bit better ethics than the person on page 2.
Yeah.
Because it's clear, it's cleaner, the ovals are clear, you have more stability, you have more structure.
Mm-hmm.
This person is more predictable, more dependable, and likes routine.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Very much a gestalt, sort of, I put it all together sort of way. So if you say, Bart, does this person want to be a team player? Am I going to hire this person as the leader of the company or a team player?
Team player.
Why do you say that?
Leader. I think leader.
A little bit of both, huh? How many CEOs have you ever seen that writes like this?
None.
Really?
How many CEOs have I seen write?
CEOs writing.
The only ones that would be similar are the CEOs of a makeup cosmetic company, and it would be a female.
Creative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're creative, they're methodical, and they're perfectionism. But that's not common among CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's common among beautiful makeup-type women where they're perfectionists and they have a certain air for organization and beauty.
The CEO
generally, generally, CEOs write a little bit more sloppy, more egomaniacal, and less legible.
Yeah.
Mainly because speed of thinking tends to be a trait pretty common among CEOs.
Right.
So I'm going to say this person's probably a good team player across the board and a leader, probably not natural born, but I think with the T-bars, at least above the stem, you got a chance there. But I don't see the level of dynamicness that I normally see like in a CEO's handwriting. So I wouldn't count off on a test, but I would definitely say team player would be my primary answer. What about loyalty?
Yes.
Now, loyalty is so hard to predict these days because people change, but guess what? Someone that's more attention to detail,
mm-hmm.
clean eye dots, more rhythm, they're going to appreciate and demand routine and repetition and stability.
Mm-hmm.
Stability equals loyalty in most circles.
Dots. Is that Einstein's handwriting?
This is not Einstein's handwriting. No. Although what's interesting is I tried to get a handwriting sample that was sort of methodical, but if you look real closely, they're pretty sharp M angles.
It's very small.
So it sort of has the gestalt of someone who's like methodical and slow, but the M's are pretty pointy, so you have to give this girl credit, a lot smarter than her emotional temperament.
Huh.
So not a perfect example. I was looking for one. Sorry, they're still sawing the floor next door.
Okay. What does it mean that obscure, the S is open, the baseline.
Anytime the S is open, I have, here's the thing, that is a connector from the B, because the S isn't open on the wisdom. So I don't know that it has a huge meaning, because it's almost letter perfect to what she was taught in third grade, which then it would almost be a conservative nature when people write like they were taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll look that up and see if I can find an answer for you. Again, I don't see it as a huge issue because the other S's are always connected there. Okay. So, again, I just see good ethics, clear O's, T-bars are moderate, basically, likes to have the routine, although the points on the M's would tell me that she does, like, a little bit of variety. Okay.
Bart, the E's are interesting.
What about the capital E's that are sort of lowercase, but they look like pruning E's?
That is a desire for culture, and I believe 2 weeks ago we had a newsletter, and the subject line said, "Don't tell Tom Cruise I said this." Did you guys read that?
Yes.
Right.
Go back and look at it. We had some email problems 2 weeks ago, but it was about the desire for culture. It talked about L. Ron Hubbard, Tom Cruise, and generally the fact that people that write these E's tend to have more cultural flair, tend to be very common among writers. L. Ron Hubbard wrote 700 books. I mean, he was a prolific writer, a very, very, very bright man, despite whatever you think about his religion. And that E is very common among literary people.
And the T, when it's crossed, it starts out real heavy, and then it kind of fades off.
Yeah, two meanings on that in general. The first meaning is sarcasm, which is typically in the grapho deck. The second meaning is if somebody fades out all their strokes, they sometimes don't finish what they start. There's not an easy definition to know when and which is which. It really has to do with the other traits in the writing.
On that E, what if the E looks like that, but it's actually laying down to where it looks like a W, but it's the E?
I don't have an answer for you.
I've seen that, and I've because I knew that particular formation was the cultural thing, but I've seen it laying down. I was just kind of curious as to
what I've never seen that in person. I've never seen the book, but I'm sure, and as a panel of 10 people in Dallas, we'll do that. There's on the enrollment form for today, as well as any every class, there's a question form. If you type that in that question form, we're going to take all those questions, compile them, and we're going to answer as many as we possibly can. And so that's going to be one thing as far as the panels go. We'll get up everybody and we'll say, what does this mean? And maybe one of our teachers has seen that in person. Maybe they have it. Maybe they've investigated it. Because clearly these really obscure traits.
I have seen it. And it was a photographer who made her E's that way. And that E looked just like the shape of her breast.
that's kind of what it looks like when it's laying to the left that way.
I think that's a great note to close this phone call.
It was nurturing.
Yeah, very, 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 very.
We all got it.